Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of the Woke Salaryman podcast. This episode's guests are the founders of the Black Hole Group. The Black Hole Group is a collective of lifestyle and F&B concepts, and they're just kicking a lot of ass in the F&B space with very distinctive culinary and lifestyle concepts. They started out in 2012 with a backpackers hostel and then has since like gone on to expand into F&B outlets and stuff. And now they own about 13 lifestyle and F&B concepts, which is quite something considering like how difficult it is to survive in the F&B industry. And more importantly, they are friends who started a business together, just like the Woke Salaryman, which is a business that is started by me and my friend Rui Ming. So there's a lot of stuff that we want to ask them about when it comes to friendship and running businesses. And basically their journey as plucky 26-year-olds running around putting out fires in their backpackers hostel to essentially now F&B moguls. So the convo was great. Like, I think it's going to be an excellent episode. We learned so much and had so much fun. And we hope that you also learn something and have a lot of fun as well. I hope you enjoy the episode.
So as you rightly pointed out, we started at first, right, about 10 years ago with a backpackers hostel. Mm. It's called Shop House, a social hostel, five-story building on Arab Street. And this is how the name came about, actually. So because we ran the hostel on the second, third, fourth, and fifth floor, and then on the first floor, we had a cafe called Working Title, the one that we're sitting in today, right? Our staff used to not go home for days on end. Because it's a hostel, right? So we used to keep like two or three beds or maybe like one room aside
For the staff.
Yeah, so they come to work in the cafe entire day, knock off at 10 p.m, hang out with the guests until like 2-3 a.m. and hang out until 2-3 a.m. with guests from all over the world, and then go to bed in the hostel, wake up, go to the nearby cafe to tapao breakfast, and then start work.
Also, it's not your force them one.
No,
they want to stay.
They really want to, because it's just so convenient, right? This would go for days on end, it wouldn't go back for days on end, and we used to always joke, this place, that building, right, used to suck people in. It's called the black hole.
Black hole.
And that's why you have, I saw a shot of your office, there's a very big word, suck harder. At the back, like it's a motto or something.
Yeah,
right?
It's a motto, and it's meant to be provocative, that's why it's so big. But it's also meant to mean that if you want to try and succeed, you just have to suck harder.
Like fail, embrace the failure.
Embrace the failure and just try again. Oh. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So thanks for the introduction. I think like, the big reason also why we wanted to talk to Moose and Kelvin is because they actually started this business in 2012, but they met in JC. Rumi and I, who started the Woke Salaryman together, we met in Poly. Mm. So I thought, wow, they are 5 years older than us. They have a lot of experience in basically being friends who started a business together, maintain a business together, and still are, I assume, friends. Maybe your age. Your age.
not every day. Certain days you're friends.
It's kind of like that as well.
A love-hate relationship. Yeah.
Right. Apart from just like talking to them about their F&B acumen, you know, which is quite something because F&B has such a high failure rate, we also wanted to specifically talk about how to basically start a business with friends. Because people used to say, don't start business with loved ones or friends, you know? So I think I would like to talk to y'all about that. So maybe just first question, right? How did y'all meet?
We first met in junior college. We were classmates. We went to school. I think school was a great reason for us to meet friends and share stories and do silly things together. And then the education was just the side dish, the vessel to meet.
Extracurricular activities in the school. So what was your friendship? Did you all like hang out? Were you all like best friends? Or is it a clique or something like that?
I wouldn't put it. I think we clicked quite well as a group in the class. I mean, playing football obviously was a key reason. We really hung out a lot, from primary to secondary to JC. I think JC was when I think I forged the closest relationships with this group of friends, our school friends as well.
Right.
So I think we've all been pretty tight.
Wait, then how did y'all decide to start a business? When did that come to light?
So we both went to NUS. I studied in the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences, and Kelvin went to business school. Mm. We graduated, he went on to work for agencies, and then I signed on with SCDF, Singapore Civil Civil Defense Force. Mm. 3 years in, I think Kelvin worked for a few agencies and then he started his own company as well.
Mm.
And a few years into my role, I really enjoyed what I did at SCDF, but I thought that if I wanted to run a business or start a business, it's better to do it at a younger age, you know? Yeah. So if you fail, you're still young, you can figure things out, continue education, or you can figure it out, lah. Yeah. So I thought, okay, better to quit and start early. So, but before I did that, I did the sensible thing. Kelvin was one of the very few friends that I knew who had a business. Mm. So I called him up. He just so happened to live very near the SCDF HQ.
Oh.
Just literally 2 minutes down the road. Yeah. Where?
MacPherson.
I said, hey, Kelvin, come on, lunch. Discuss something with you. So we went for lunch and said, hey, I want to open a hostel, but I have no idea how. Like, how do you even start a company?
Mm.
And then Kelvin said, okay, let's do it.
Wait, what was your...
Kelvin said, let's do it. Then I was okay, let's do it. Okay,
what was your business at the time?
I was doing, back then they called it brand activation, but kind of like events. Brand so you see your, classic right now is your road shows and all that where you...
Prudential road show.
Not so cheesy, but cooler ones. I had clients like Air Asia and all that. So we're doing we was doing F1. They wanted to promote, Air Asia wanted to promote, so they bring in the car, the simulator and all that. So we ran road shows like that for different brands at Zook and all that. So I think that was sort of a natural transition from what I was doing from an agency background.
Yeah,
I think. But then it was tough, because I was also alone.
Wait, then he said, when he said, hey, let's do a hostel together, then you just said yes. Then what happened to your company?
So to give a bit of a backdrop, in junior college, right, we got along really well. To the point that we would, I don't know if we're supposed to say it there, to the point that we in the second year of junior college, we were going to graduate already. And we play football a lot. And typically in schools, right, you have inter-school and then you have inter-class, right? Our school didn't have inter-class, and we thought,
why we don't have this?
It's ridiculous. What are the teachers doing?
Mm.
So we thought, you know what? They're not going to do it. We're going to graduate. We want to live with a memory, right? Let's take it into our own hands. Let's create a tournament.
Wow. Inter-class.
Inter-class tournament.
Wow.
So we got me and him, so-called co-chair of that committee, and then our classmates, all the other guys, we forced them. You're all in a committee, you have to do the this and that and this and that.
Oh.
Came together, we came out with forms and everything. And we organized an inter-class tournament.
And you had to go, Brother Paul, can we do this?
No.
You just did yourself.
We just did ourselves. No teacher approval and we involved
our school premises.
Yeah, our school.
In retrospect, right, it was very grey.
Because
they were like, submission forms, and then we passed it to all the class.
No indemnity forms.
No indemnity, nothing. No insurance, nothing. And then we made them pay. $50 per applicant, per team.
Per class.
Per team.
And then we even had first prize, how much we gave out, and second prize.
But y'all didn't take profit.
We didn't take profit.
We even got a referee committee to referee all the matches.
Wow, that's crazy.
By the semi-finals, right, the Grand Stand at CJC was packed, people watching the match, and people were writing these letters. This guy won. The bookie.
Pre-social media.
Post that, then we realized that, we work really well together. So maybe one day we'll do something together.
So that was just the two of y'all?
The two of us were spearheading it, but we had the rest of our classmates that really involved in it.
Yeah. That's very similar to us, because we also somewhat similar, because we were friends in poly, we did stupid things together and stuff. Then we graduated poly, went to different paths all together, then came back and met again at Mothership.
Where we shot the first video.
I shot a video for y'all, and I was so inspired by y'all. That's why I even hit up with y'all again. I'm like, these guys are still killing it.
Slide into the DMs.
So we worked together at Mothership, on some things that we would like to do. Like he has some idea for some political cartoon or whatever, some news cartoon. Then I'll draw for him. We can work together quite okay. Then that's where I guess it sowed the seed y'all. Right?
And then I think after we both left Mothership, we will meet up regularly and we will think of how to make money.
How to start business. It's same as your idea. I think very similar.
What business should we run?
But it was crazy how fast y'all did it. It seemed very fast. Maybe you're cutting a lot of details out, but the idea that you said, hey, I want to start a hostel. Let's do it, Like, it's just so...
So bizarre, actually.
So, now that, like, now that I think as about young people... But you're right about the young people part, like, because, yeah, like, it's easier to start a business when you're young. Now, if you've got kids and all that, the cost of failure is so much higher, right?
And sometimes, the ironic thing is that sometimes the less you know, the better. You're a bit more foolish and naive, right, and then you just say, you know what, let's do it. Because now, with the knowledge that we have, in retrospect, right, you look back and you think, I don't think we'll do it, man. I don't think we'll open a hostel. Knowing what we know.
Knowing what we went through with the hostel, that was actually one of the, not say silly, but was a steep learning curve that I would not want to undertake, even with the current experience.
Really? Even in hindsight?
Yeah, I'll probably do something different, like a boutique hotel, but the hostel is a beast of its own. Right. 60 guests, no matter what, in a hotel setting, hostel setting, it's still 60 guests.
Yeah.
And 60 different beds to change every day.
So from the hostel thing, then you all found that, let's have a bar or cafe downstairs. And then that grew in its own thing, title.
One hallmark of the Black Hole Group is that we never ask for trouble. Trouble always falls on our lap. So for the cafe downstairs, right, what happened was that it was a 5-story building. The first floor, URA said, you all cannot run a hostel. It needs to be retail or F&B.
Right.
So we thought, we got no experience in both. We're not interested also. So rent it out. So we rented it to a tenant, Egyptian restaurant. So they ran it for a few months. And you've been to the hostel, right? So it's got very traveler, hippie, Aussie, European kind of vibes. And then you go downstairs, white lights, portable tables, shisha. Back then they had shisha. And then we thought,
the vibe not matching.
Not matching, not synchronized. So we spoke to the landlord. In fact, Kelvin spoke to the landlord, bank table, and say,
I don't know.
Well, your bank table or your bank table?
We kind of told him I think it's not sort of in line with what we want to achieve, or it's not cohesive for the whole experience from the guests all the way to even your patrons. So he decided to just, then you guys take it back.
Kevin not happy. He said, no, you're breaking the contract. And he said, no. And he gave back the key. Legalities aside, we took back the keys and we thought, you know what? Back then the rent was 18,000 for the whole building, right? Wow. One third of it covered by the landlord on the bottom floor.
Yeah.
And we thought, okay, now if we have it back, we have to pay the full rent. So it's got to be a business that's quickly generating money. So couldn't wait anymore. So we quickly came up with an idea to sell. So we thought 60 guests in the hostel, right? They need to eat food, they need to chill out, they need to use internet. So just run a lounge downstairs, sell very simple stuff, sandwiches, some food. We didn't really have time to develop the business plan. So what we did was very quickly come up with a basic menu and wrote a quick business plan and titled it Working Title.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be...
Because the Working Title also got a bracket around it.
Yeah.
So that was the original one.
The original one.
Really Working Title. Next time.
Yes.
We had planned to, because when we wrote the business plan, right, at the top of it, we put, the name of the cafe is Working Title. It's a Working Title. We're still working on it. Eventually, by the time we had to open the cafe, we realized, you know what, let's just stick to this. So eventually, Kelvin got the...
Wow. Can you show the camera, that's awesome. It's a Working Title tattoo.
I didn't think it was so big, actually, when I first got it.
Then you got it, oh my goodness.
The first time his mom saw it, it's like, that better not be a real one. Luckily, it's not a real one. She just assumed that it wasn't a real one.
She was expecting to come off or rub off over the next few days.
It's like, this one very good. It won't come off.
Zebra marker.
So the first cafe was like that. We didn't intend. We didn't have F&B experience. We don't know how to make coffee. We don't know how to run an F&B. We didn't know how to run an F&B business even. Kind of fell on our lap. It's more out of necessity that we had to quickly run it to kind of offload the rent that we were offloading to somebody else. And now, then it became a business.
Wow.
But the beautiful thing was that because it was put together with a very low budget, right? Just basically tables from his home, equipment from my home, random tables and chairs put together. For some reason, the media picked it up. Media said, we've not seen anything like this. I think Straits Times, 8 days.
Yeah.
So it picked up, and social media wasn't so big back then, right?
Wow, I think it was the start of Instagram.
Yeah,
it was really the infancy of Instagram.
So the traditional media was still going strong. People picked it up and people started coming and it became pretty busy. So that was when me and Kevin realized, you know what? I think we have a shot. We have a shot at this. Let's do it proper. Let's train ourselves on how to do proper coffee. Let's train ourselves on how to run an FMB business. And that's what we did.
Wow.
But
sorry, you go
ahead. What were like the margins like back in the day? Or like, and has it changed?
Yeah. That's exactly the point. So right, for the first 3 years of the business, we were totally clueless.
Yeah.
We don't know what margins were. Yeah. We don't know
cost of goods.
We don't know that things need to be measured.
Yeah. Oh shit.
So basically we were just coming to work and enjoying ourselves.
Yeah.
Wow. Just like this is the place that we would like to run. This is the kind of furniture, this kind of the music that we like. This is what the customers like. This is what good service is, and that's it. We earn the money. We don't know how much we earn. At the end of the day, we have a bunch of money in the bank. We owe the rent, let's pay the rent, and then we owe the pay. We have to dish out the payroll, and we dish out payroll, and that's it. And then we have extra money, and then we just keep rolling.
Damn, and you guys are 26 years old.
Yeah.
We were doing this for like a good 3 years, actually.
30, early 30 years.
Yeah. Almost 30, almost 30.
Almost
30. Late 20s. Yeah, so late. So 27 to 29.
Yeah.
Well, I thought we were chaotic.
Yeah, it's quite chaotic.
We also quite, but I think like it's
it was pretty chaotic. Like, and then we realized, like, how are we surviving all this while?
True sheer luck.
But so in retrospect, you all make money?
We did. We must have lah. We must have. Because we needed to open new outlets, right?
Yeah. Have money.
We took it from the profits of the existing business. And then we kept rolling and rolling.
Oh, that's crazy.
How did you guys fund like... Because you say rent is 18K, right?
Yeah.
And like in your 20s. Because I cannot imagine even
paying. That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Back borrow back. Still. I mean, traditionally, borrowed from my mother.
Mm.
But I think what the difference was, we were prepared to, not say to lose it all, but I think we had a plan. If this to wasn't going to work out, we had a timeline to pay it back.
Mm.
I think we know that, this is something we're not going to burn it, but we're going to pay it back if it doesn't work out.
So you pay back your mom already?
Yeah,
that's checking. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously took a longer time than expected.
Yeah.
Also, we struck deals, and I remember that we had to renovate the 5-story building, right? You guess how much renovation?
Wow.
5-story building.
Our reno knowledge is so limited because the office is so small.
Okay.
I would think. Okay, let me guess. 250K.
I think half a buck, You'll be talking about half a million to set up a hostel.
Wow.
So my dad happened to be a contractor at that point in time. So we struck a deal with him. First and foremost, we blended the approach such that he did most of the work, but instead of engaging him for every single thing, we also chipped in. So instead of getting people to paint the wall, we said
you paint the wall.
You teach us how to paint and we paint the wall. So we managed to drive down the cost of renovation from $500,000 to about half of that.
Mm, 250K, wow.
That's one thing. On top of that, we did not pay a single cent on I think we paid a little bit but we did not pay upfront. That quarter million, right? 250,000 we paid over the course of like 3 to 4 years. So we dragged it out. So I think when you have no money and you wanted things to work, you just have to make things happen. Strike deals and put your commitment and
think it was born out of necessity. To be very creative about how to pay back the people that we owe to, and in a sustainable manner. Didn't want to just promise and then we're gonna pay you back in 3 years time. I'll see you in 3 years time. I think we sort of paid it off as well while we continued to earn and grow in that aspect.
And early on you said there was like a timeline, right? Like what was the timeline to see whether it worked out?
I mean, for me it was 3 years. We signed a 3-year lease.
Yeah.
So hopefully we have worked out in 3 years.
Yeah. Wow.
But finally for me, right, at that point in time, I did not have a like deadline. Yeah. For me, it was like all in already.
Wow.
That's what young people do.
Never thought that I would give myself 3 years, but I was like, okay, in, and this is going to be a forever thing.
But you all never discuss on me?
No,
you guys
never.
3 years.
Really, because at that point in time, I think we were... we were just like fighting fire. Just like we had to do, we had to serve, we have to change the bedsheet. We just
change the bedsheet. Nobody changed, we change.
Yeah, that kind of thing. That's it. Or it's like we have to fix a bed, pay someone to $100 to fix a bed. But never mind, we do it ourselves after the shift tonight. Wow. So it's more of like just getting things done, and then over the days and over the weeks, piecing things together and seeing how, figuring out how we can do better.
I think Rachel and I also had like had a timeline also. I think we wanted to make money within the year or something, and then if not, we would not do Walk Salary Man.
Well, I remember what it was. So we were doing it as a side hustle lah. We were not so brave that we just jump in, because I was a lot more like. I'm very risk averse, you know? So we were doing the Walk Salary Man for, I think, like 1 year as a, like, after work, then we work from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. every day on Walk Salary Man. Then, like, I told him one point, my wife is upset with me because I don't spend time with her after work and stuff. Like, I think I give it about 6 to 9 months, then if we don't start making money, I gotta stop, you know? So he's like, okay, you know. But I think it's quite cool also because like what you described, especially at the start, like when you, how you came about to start the working title and stuff. I think what you kind of did was you created great jobs for yourselves, but it was not yet a business in the sense that you could step away from it and you could scale it.
Yep.
So when did it start to turn where y'all went, hey, we are on to something, or is it a necessity thing, you know? Hey, let's make this a proper business.
Well, I think there's not a proper, there wasn't a proper like time,
like a hard,
but,
like,
yeah, not a hard deadline or anything. Yeah. But I think it was like perhaps like 1 year or 2 years into the business where we started thinking, hey, we've run this for a while now, like how much should we get paid? Because I remember that we were
not taking home, much salary there.
Not taking at all.
Call it allowance.
I think for the first 6 months or 1 year, we didn't take anything. 6 months at least, we didn't take anything at all.
Right.
Dividends basically living off our previous savings. Previous savings.
And then like 6 months or 1 year in, we realized that, you know what, we have to take something.
Yeah,
I think we talked about like $300.
Oh, 300?
Yeah, ridiculous. It was a ridiculous amount.
More during NS.
I think recruit salary.
Recruit.
A long time. Yeah.
I still remember our first part-timer, Bazira.
Full-timer.
She was our first full-timer. And that was, a huge undertaking. But not because of the pay. I think more of that responsibility that we're responsible for someone's career, someone's life. Because for part-timer students, you know, they're just going to be in transition.
Come and go.
But we're still very pretty close to them. Right. And I think I've carried that same feeling now that we're responsible for 150 people's lives already. It's not something between me and him. Hey, I think we've had enough fun. Let's.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, it's not working out. Yeah. Hey, let's call it quits. I think now we're responsible for this ecosystem of people that we've brought in.
So for, over a year, we did not dare to hire a staff because we felt that was a proper commitment and responsibility. So we just dealt with a lot of part-timers and did everything on our own. It was only 1 year in that we thought, you know what, we need a full-time person to really look at to really run this place. And even then, it wasn't as if we appointed her and then we stepped back. We hired her and then we were still very much a part of the process.
It related very hard to us also because we kind of take it as we go, you know. It's like when we first started, we say a year would be good, if we can get a paying client would be good. Then when you get there, then you start to expand your sort options, of ambition. Then it's like, okay, maybe we go 3 years now. Then when we hit 3 years, okay lah, I don't feel like quitting yet. Let's go for 5. And then, but when you start hiring people, it's like, hey shit, there are other people now. I can't just F off and say I'm done with it.
It's a shared responsibility.
So if we do want to say step off and retire a little bit or take a sabbatical, we have to tell people so that they can make career plans, because these are full-timers. And their careers are in our hands. So it becomes a bit harder now for us to just let go. So like, do you guys still hang out actually? Like as friends nowadays?
Because it,
I mean, no pressure if you don't hang out.
It's so grey anyway. Because I can't see work as work.
I mean, when we meet, we obviously talk about different things. Obviously, it revolves a lot around work. But we don't see it as work. Not all the time.
I mean, there's the work portion, but a lot of times it's just a lot of joking around.
Joking around, maybe to him, because he's the CEO. so I get the brunt of it. But no. I kind of think it's a lot of things that we talk about that develop character for me, at least for me. Because I think he points out my flaws.
Mm.
I can't really point out his flaws, but no, like, he points out my flaws. Like, hey, I think you should be doing this, doing that. I think that also affects my character, how I look at things, how I treat people. Oh, hey, have you seen this random video?
How to play. You're just talking about news before
the other
we started.
The other day, you know what? I found out as an FMB mogul, he doesn't know how to peel a mango.
Oh.
So I had to go home, buy a mango, and make a video for him and say, like, Kelvin, this is how.
Also, you actually recorded.
Ah,
like,
oh, my God.
This is how you peel the damn thing.
Because if this leaks to the media, that he doesn't know how to peel
a different way of peeling a mango. I mean, I use a peeler, but he tell me, why are you using a peeler?
Use peeler, I don't use peeler, man. Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. See, they shit talk each other.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. That's damn funny. That is hilarious.
I had to make a video to teach him how to peel a mango.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's... I mean, we kind of send shit to each other like that also. Very, very lame things.
I think if people look at like the chat between Weichuan and Amy, they're like, what the fuck? These people run this stupid page.
Yeah. So, you all do, in a way, hang out, like, just on the everyday basis. We enjoy each other's company.
I mean, we do. We've been hanging out for a long time. But it's different from when you were younger. I think when you were younger, you're more sports inclined. You're more... You hang out in like bigger groups. Yeah. Just Kelvin has a married with kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, obviously, family takes priority. Mm-hmm. So I think we do hang out. But just the dynamics are different. We've evolved in the way that we hang out and the things that we talk about.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, recently we went to, I think, Melbourne. So, work trip. Mm. Yeah, so, I think it was the... Long time since we've been
just two of y'all.
Just the two of us.
On a work trip.
I mean, traveling.
Traveling.
I can't remember the last time we traveled. We used to. Why we started hustle because we used to travel all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
We used to travel all the time together, Bali, all around Southeast Asia and stuff like that. Yeah, right, so the last trip was Melbourne. So I think that was a good hangout / work trip,
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, different dynamics, really, because. What we talk about is how do we grow the business. What's our personal ambitions?
Right. Because we are friends, we also hang out, like we go and cycle and overseas together and stuff. But then like, maybe it's just me because I'm a less friendly person. Like I get sick of people quite fast and he has to suffer with that. Like I felt a little bit of, not say guilt, but like, the dynamic of our friendship is different. We don't hang out like specially, but we do that at the office all the time actually. You're right. Like
work
becomes... In a way, our way of sending each other memes. We just do it at work, you know? Then after that, I also don't want to spend too much time. Do y'all get that? Like, oh, I'm sick of seeing you, you know? Because y'all see each other all the time, right?
I mean, I wouldn't say sick, but... I'm not
sick of you, especially. Yeah, I'm usually sick of a lot of people.
But I would say different... Because, we're both married. I have kids, he doesn't have kids. During the weekends, I will meet friends who have kids.
Because otherwise it's a bit weird if, you know, you got no kids, then you got kids and you meet.
Yeah, right? I mean, not that it's not possible. I mean, my daughter hates him.
Oh.
Love hate.
frenemy. She always makes fun of her. But it's not hey, let's meet this weekend so you can hang out with my daughter. It just doesn't work that way already.
It's very organic. And I think it's healthier that way because, imagine you are working together and then you are hanging out together and then family time together.
Your family time becomes work time because two of us hang out, then we talk about work.
So
it's also not a good balance as well.
Because last time we also have mutual friends and I realized at one point sometimes we meet with our other friends then we just start talking about work stuff until the other friends are like, that's also not very nice for us to do it. So I guess from y'all's experience, I think it's normal right? As friends go, you will change these kind of expectations even more so when you work together. I mean, y'all hinted a bit towards this also just now, like when you said sometimes you all check each other's personalities also, so maybe when we meet client, don't say this kind of thing. Like, how often do y'all disagree? And what does that usually look like?
Disagreeing is a pretty strong word. After all, we are two different people and it is expected and it's healthy and it's beneficial to have different personalities.
Mm.
So in the early years as partners running the business, I mean, I was young and a bit more naive then. So I thought that, everything needs to be the same. How I see it must be how you see it.
Mm.
But we started to realize that he has got a very different personality from me. Mm. And that is not a problem. That is a blessing, in fact. Mm. Like we kind of complement each other. Mm. Without going into the details, like I'm better at certain other things, more like abstract matters, strategic planning and longer term vision. And he's better at getting things moving and getting things done and being prescriptive in how we do things.
Mm.
Yeah. And I used to be frustrated at why he cannot understand how I see things. Mm. But then I realized, hey, actually, if both of us are like that, business will be in trouble, man.
Right.
Yeah, so it's actually perfect that he's like that and I'm like that. And then we see how we can cover each other's weaknesses.
So maybe not quite disagreements, but when y'all feel like a certain fire should be fought in different ways, how do y'all kind of resolve that?
Okay, so now we have very clear roles. Mm. As a CEO of the company, I look into certain matters. As a CCO of the company, he looks into certain matters. And then we learn. Okay, so in the early stages, right, how we divided the job role was very first year, there was no division. Mm. There was just like everything I do, you must do. Mm. Every meeting that I go, he goes.
50-50, fair.
Everything, yeah. Every single thing. And then we started dividing by time. Mm. So Kelvin will do more morning stuff. Mm. So he will start at 7 a.m. and finish at 8 p.m. Oh. I will start at 9 a.m. and finish at midnight.
Like the shift, lah. Yeah. Run the hostel.
Yeah, so right. The overlap was a lot. Yeah. So he came 2 hours early, I went home 2 hours late.
Right.
And then it became bigger and bigger. He starts at 7, finish at 3. I start at noon and finish at midnight. Something like that. So we split by time.
Yep.
And then he got a car. For some reason, for $300 a month, I think he could afford a car. I don't know how I couldn't. He must do it.
Back then, cars were cheap, man. Back then, cars were...
$300 a month.
Yeah, my car's installment was $20 a month. Yeah, back then. I think unheard of now. My first car was...
$20?
$300 plus a month. Wow. $300 plus a month. So, I think unheard of these days.
Okay, so what did the car do to the...
Okay, so he had a car and I was scratching my head and thinking like, how the hell did he get afford a car, man? It's ridiculous. He's siphoning money off someone.
Embezzling.
Embezzling.
Is that why I'm getting paid only 300? Because...
but that's why I was CFO in the end after that.
But no lah, okay. So anyway, he got a car and because of that, he ran a lot of like errands. Got to buy milk, got to buy things, Kelvin. Yeah. So in the end, he handled logistics.
Mm.
He handled logistics because he had a car. Not because he was great at logistics, but because he had
a car.
That's
why he was logistics for a while.
Yeah, and then because he's always out, right? Gallivanting, right?
Gallivanting.
I'm always like stuck with the people.
Yeah.
So I ended up, and I HR, kind of enjoy talking to people and getting to know people.
Right.
So I ended up doing HR. Mm.
Right.
And then because of that, I started doing payroll and learning like HR.
Finance, all this stuff.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay lah, but something that you're kind of good at talking to people and interviewing and making, like, delegating stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turned into a skill that I picked up doing payroll and understanding payroll and managing the entire HR world.
Sometimes we have young entrepreneurs who are also starting businesses in school with their friends and stuff. And that division of labor, especially when it comes to, I guess, the amount of equity that you have, oftentimes is such a big thing, especially when it's new business. Like you were mentioning time, right?
Yeah.
So was there a time where, and you sort of hinted a bit like, how can you afford a car? Like, I think we also have this, I mean, we don't talk about it a lot, but sometimes I'll
you
also
You talk about
like,
it now? Okay, sure.
No, we don't need to. We don't need to. Because I used to think like, hey, we should spend an equal amount of time at work because we have equal amount of equity. But his working style is different, you see. Yes. Like, so sometimes he go back earlier, but he work at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
And to me, that's like, hey, why are you, it's destructive, but he makes it work for him, you know? So at some point, I feel like I started to look less into the input of the amount of time. I mean, we're not factory workers. It's not like the more time you spend, the better you are.
Yeah.
So now you can steal on something for 9 hours. Then when you write, it comes out in 30 minutes. You know?
Exactly. Mm.
So
it's difficult to measure. Like, we call this is like intellectual energy, right? How do you measure intellectual energy, right? And
you all do different things. So it was good after that, right? Yeah. So
early years was easy because it's just doing shift, right? Making baits, checking in people, checking out people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can divide by time fair. Yeah. But as the company grows, you have to develop HR directives, HR systems and processes. He had to develop it himself. So it's like contribution is different, so you cannot measure. So that was when I think as friends, right, we evolved our chemistry into like a professional relationship. Because even though I knew him very well as a friend, I did not know him, his professional
working
capacity.
Style.
But what we had with each other from that friendship was that trust. So that trust,
you know, this dude is good for it at the end of the day.
Good for it, right. He's good for it. Whether he knows or don't know how to do it, but he's good for, he's reliable. So I think that set a very good foundation. I think without that foundation, all the other problems that we face, right, would be very difficult to solve. Because then the trust, the trust wouldn't be like, hey, he said he would do tonight, but never do. Then you feel.
I think speaking of trust, I think Wei Chun haven't looked at our bank account for like 2-3 years.
I'm
just the only guy with a bank account. Like,
bro, in fact, very similar. So when I was CFO, when I managed the finance, he never looked at the bank account. And when he was CFO, right, in fact, we were happy. We were like, I don't look at the bank account. It's a burden.
It's also trust.
And
you're right. It is a burden because he has to worry about some things that I don't even have to touch. You know, like the integrity of our storytelling, our relationship with our readers, and how we are managing, say, whether we are doing too much sponsored content or not. I just have to worry about my creative storytelling. I don't have to worry about that stuff because he's handling it. So actually, it's also trust but also burden. It's quite nice, that balance.
Do you think you guys could have pulled it off, like, if it was just one of you guys?
I think he can do it on his own and I can do it on his own, but it wouldn't be different. It wouldn't be as powerful. It would. It perhaps might have been easier in the beginning, but as you know, like, if you wanna go,
the African proverb.
You wanna go fast, you go alone. You wanna go far, you go together. So I think in the beginning, it would have been easier to be alone because, like, he doesn't understand. Like, you know what? I do it on my own. But there will come a certain point that, if you do it together, you might be more powerful. But the tricky thing is that to do it together, there needs to be a lot of like hard work to kind of synergize and make our efforts like cohesive, you know?
We spent
a long time doing that to really understand each other's strength and weakness and synergize.
I think we're still figuring.
Still figuring out.
Because as the business grow, our dynamics grow, our roles change, the company's needs change. So I think there's a lot of different ways to look at it now. I mean, what we were doing maybe 6 months ago, that works for us, but 6 months down the road, there's a lot of things that changed. The way he looks at things, the way I look at things have to change as well.
And the world will change. So it's also internal and external, right?
Oh, exactly, so we are like compound. For us, it's fun. Like, it's really fun, but it's really difficult because you compound very steep learning curves. To run a business is difficult. To run an FMB business is
even
more difficult. To run an FMB business during the COVID time is difficult. To grow as a leader from a 10-man company to a 200-man company is difficult because your mindset is going to change. And then you compound that with how the world has changed digitally, the way that Gen Z
and that stuff you cannot even control, right?
Changing consumer habits,
human habits, like Gen Z's, the way they think is different. So you compound all this learning curve is like a very, it's like almost like a vertical curve.
It's like a cliff that you have to climb.
Maybe like that. I think that's where I really appreciate I can have like honest chats with Kelvin and he's got the humility to really, I mean, both of us like got the humility to like, okay, we are doing this, but at the same time I'm open to evolve my way, to change my ways. Because the leader that I was 5 years ago and today is also the essence still there, but the in terms of the finesse and the execution, I think I'm very different.
It's never a set and forget thing. You must always constantly revisit and retune the machine.
And sometimes it's difficult to stomach, you know, because you've been doing a certain thing a certain way and it works. And it works. Like, certain things we hustle and it works. But now we realize, we are this size. We are exposed to the media. We have certain responsibilities. We cannot do it this way anymore. But that's not to disregard and say, that was the wrong way, because that got us from A to A to G. Now we gotta get from G to Z.
So give it the due respect, but it's time to change.
Exactly.
Right.
So for us, it's been that journey from day one until today. It's always been that, okay, thank you for that part, but now we have to change our ways. And we've learned to accept that, that's the way it is. At first, if you don't do it real, it can be very sensitive. All these 5 years I've done it, no thank you. And now suddenly, I cannot.
I always say that.
Kevin's favorite quote is, no thank you, it's always fuck yous.
I mean, that's the I'll say unfortunate thing as a business owner.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna hey, thank you for giving me the job. It's more like, hey, why am I doing extra hours? Why is my pay late? Hey, why this, why that? There's never hey, thank you for this and that. But I think it's kind of thing we come to accept.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna give you a pat on the back. You just
you all give each other.
I know. Right. If anything, we don't.
Oh, you don't.
I mean,
we wait one more.
We wait one more. I think it's up to us to push to push the business forward. And we've never been complacent. I think that's why we've survived until now, because we've never came a point to say, hey, we made it. We are successful.
Put your legs up, right?
I think maybe we should do it more, but
maybe
we've never felt that, I think, hey, this is the time to celebrate.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
There was a book that said, like, you know, the person needed to go from like startup to, you know, to a unicorn company is very different from the person who needs to maintain like a big MNC.
Oh yeah,
it's
so like different.
Different type of people at different stages.
So every time I tell people I'm a founder and CEO, I have to like kind of, if they want to listen, like I will tell them that it's two different things. You know, a chicken rice shop owner is also a business person.
Also a founder.
After 10 years, he's a founder, but he runs a small chicken rice shop. We like evolve from being founders, cleaning toilets and changing bed sheets to running a $1 million company, and like there's a lot of education involved, and there's a lot of change of tweaking of mindset involved, and sometimes it's hard to stomach because we think we know it all, and then and then you realize you just don't. So it's a very humbling journey la.
I wanted to ask y'all about COVID. So how was that like for y'all, and how did y'all make it through?
It was the game changer, if anything. I felt that was, I mean, we had a meeting with the whole management. When sort of the first
new Zoom meeting, right?
Not Zoom meeting. When I think the kind of, we were already sort of pivoting towards delivery. At that stage before COVID, but then I think when we sort of the impending news that we were gonna go into lockdown, I think we just gathered the management together. It's sort of like, okay, do we want to do this? Or should we just take a hiatus and then come back after that?
Oh wow!
Yeah, so I think we sort of say, okay, let's go for it. And that sort of sparked the journey of, I think, the transformation to what we were today. But we sort of chose this time to really, I would say, clean up our act. I think we were not complacent, but comfortable about what we were doing. We weren't in a rush to, I would say, evolve. We weren't in a rush to evolve, but we needed to evolve during COVID. Before that, we were, I think, just going through the flow and slowly improving. But this was where a wake-up call. It's either sink or swim.
Right.
Yeah. Even with all the, I think, JSS and all that, we were just relying on that to keep us afloat.
JSS.
Yeah.
JSS is a
the great Singapore.
No. That's
JSS.
Just support scheme.
I suppressed that in my memory.
Yeah. So yeah, just to rely on that, I think it would have just been a slow death. But we chose to say, okay, yeah, that was support that we needed to keep it afloat. But right, while we take this time to not only do that, but to expand. So we actually expanded the most during COVID. We opened 6 new outlets during COVID, including this outlet here. But with the foresight that it was going to be bigger and better, to help us recover faster after COVID.
Right.
Not that we've recovered totally. I think the tricky part that people don't see now is that the post-COVID effects, I will call this post-COVID, has hit businesses harder than what it was.
What the rising post-COVID effect? Like rental? That
rental
kind of
increase, rising costs, rising manpower costs. Right. Everything has gone up. And there's no support anymore. And there's that mindset that things are back to normal.
Right.
Yeah. So your landlords, everyone's thinking it's back to normal.
Yeah.
They don't see that the damage has been done. Because we've cleaned it up from the damage from the last 2 years pretty well.
Yeah.
So that it looks like it's all bright and rosy, But I think it's this is the grey area that nobody sees, that businesses and bigger brands have fallen and continue to fall. We are still seeing big groups that haven't survived COVID lah.
Kevin's right lah. I think before that we were quite happy go lucky. We just thought that, you know, let's open anything, we will do all right lah. Because that's always been the case, right?
Yeah.
Don't need to do accounting but we're profitable. Just do what we love and it's okay. And then COVID really forced us to answer the existential question, like, what are we doing all this for? Who are we? What are we doing all this for? And where the hell are we headed? And this was important because there was the option to just shut down for 2 months.
Yeah.
There was the option to lay off people. So we really had to sit down and ask ourselves, like, what kind of person
or what are our values?
What are our values? Exactly. So we really sat down. I remember we had a 13-hour meeting. We met at 11 a.m. 11 a.m. And I think we wrapped up at 1 a.m.
So no break in the middle to sleep
I mean,
or whatever.
No, like lunch
go toilet
and toilet and all that. But we met at 11. This was like a few days. Oh, when the government first announced the first lockdown, then we got the management sit down and like, you know what, it's going to be a long meeting. First and foremost, are we all open-minded to do? And what do you want to do? Do you want to go on fighting or you want to just...
Also, it was the management team, not just the founders, right?
Not just the founders, yeah.
You're also asking where are your values at?
Yes, exactly. You know? So we sat down and really spoke about like whether we want to, you know, stick together and fight on.
Yeah.
And I also... expounded a little bit more on like if that happened, well, how would that benefit us? And they all said, you know what, we want to fight on with you, and we're like, okay, so and we cannot just fight on for fun, right? We're fighting for what? For food, for survival, for what? Yeah. So I think that 13 hours was to really figure out how we want to fight, where we want to fight, with what weapons we want to fight. So it's really preparing our armory and our tactics. And like Kelvin mentioned, I think it was throughout this whole episode that we had a clearer understanding of who we really are. And that has helped a lot. So before that, you know, companies got mission, vision, values and all that. Before that, to me, it's just entering the office and it's an award. Like, wow, okay, this looks like a proper corporation. So it was during the pandemic that I realized how important these things were. They were not just... words on the wall. They were like values that we live by.
And it translates into actually what will you do with the company? Will you take a break or will you lay people off or whatever?
Exactly.
Right?
And it will translate into decisions that you make, important decisions that will be life-changing.
Right.
And it was during this period of time where we also did a roadmap, our first time ever. 8 years into the business, we engaged a consultancy firm and we said, you know what? We not only are we going to survive the pandemic, we are going to think about what we're going to do 10 years down the road. So we did a 10-year roadmap. So the first round of roadmap was just me and Kelvin and two other persons, very senior people in the company. And coincidentally, next month, we're going to do a review. It's 3 years in now. So we've checked off a lot of things on the roadmap that we developed. And next month, we're going to do another roadmap to review that what we've done in the 3 years and extend it another 10 years.
I see.
On what we're going to do in 2024 all the way to 2030.
Right.
And this time around, we thought that it would be interesting if me and Kelvin stepped out, play a more shepherd role, and let the management team
develop the roadmap. Right.
Because now you understand the values of the company. You've helped us survive the COVID from 2019 to 2023. What do you see for yourself and the company in the next 7 years?
I love that, you're really letting the management team also write the values of the company, you know, like not just, oh, we founder, then we decide, you know?
So we chart it together.
I think that's great.
I think that is, for me, the biggest, I mean, we doubled our revenue over the past few years, we opened a few more concepts, but for me, the biggest takeaway is that we've solidified and nailed down the culture, the kind of people that we are, the kind of group that we are, the kind of culture that we want to have. That mindset, you know, I think we've like firmed that up. And I think that's something that money cannot buy. Even if you have an investor of 1 million or 10 million, you cannot buy culture.
That's
something that's got to be built conscientiously.
It's forced through the fires of basically a catastrophic time like COVID,
So that is the biggest takeaway from the pandemic. I think we've built a machinery and we built a mindset.
So but there's also a heart in that machinery. That's the valuable stuff.
The heart and soul.
My last question, and talking also about like long-term goals and roadmaps ahead, like have you all thought about like personally, if your lifestyles diverge, will that affect? Like so for we're asking this because like we are still like our company is very small, four people. So whatever he chooses to do lifestyle wise, it affects our company, you know, like so he has a place, he has a little holiday home overseas. Then he's in Japan.
Oh really?
Yeah, very small.
So he's flying off in the weekend.
Osaka,
Osaka,
Nice. You can ask him about that after. Yeah, it's very cool. He renovated it and it's not that expensive actually, because Japan has a lot of these like Akiyas, they call it, like abandoned houses, that the owners are still paying tax on it. If they sell it, it's cheap, you know? So when he goes for his break, he'll still work from Japan. But it's very different. Like he's not in the office. The memes are less, you know, we joke a bit less. The vibe is different. Not say worse, but different. Whatever he's deciding his lifestyle is going to be down the road will affect us. So have y'all thought about that? Like, and how, if y'all diverge in terms of what you want, like let's say you y'all want to move overseas somewhere.
So not only have we thought about that, I think it's something that we live and breathe. That that we see ourselves as a lifestyle company, and so it would be hypocritical if we say we're a lifestyle company, but we separate work and
life.
And life, you know. So I think we embrace it. This is part of our lives, really. For me, I have commitments in UK. So there are periods of time where I have to go back to the UK for weeks or sometimes months on end. So,
okay.
So we embrace the fact that, you know, that's an arrangement, and how can we work around that instead of, like, you know, I have to do my thing, so I separate it.
Mm.
So from my regular trip to the UK, I've developed connections in the UK.
Mm.
And I've we got in touch with the FMB group in UK. And now we have plans to try to open something either in London or them in Singapore.
Wow.
So instead of using it as that's your life, I don't want to be part of it, we embrace it and see how we can make sense of it to grow the company. For example, Kelvin also he makes regular pilgrimage to Australia. Annual pilgrimage to Australia.
Right.
And I could just say, like, hey, what are you doing? Like,
company,
how are you gonna do? But instead, no, we embrace it and, like, okay, what is that your ambition? You really want to migrate? Okay, you know what? If that's the case, Melbourne makes sense for Black Hole Group to open in.
Right.
So we explore opportunities or possibilities for us to open in Melbourne. And I would say, happy to say, like 2-3 years down the road, we've developed very close relationship with a strong partner in Melbourne, and we are in talks in opening something, and once we open something, it'll be much easier for Kelvin to
And this is years in the talks, right? Like, I mean, you're doing this kind of pilgrimages for a long time, but it's not like, hey, you go Australia or Melbourne a lot, I want to see you develop a business opportunity or 3 possible business opportunities in this amount of years. It's more like,
yeah, like pretty organic. And then we also have conversations about what do you want in life. Do you want to migrate to Australia? Then, but we don't force it. Let's say he wants to migrate to Fiji. Then we're like, okay, then we have to figure something out. Like, that's your treat. We built a company in such a way that you can disappear for 3 months and join Fiji. But Melbourne, you like, and actually for business, you open in Melbourne, that would be great. And then I have somebody that I trust who will be staying in Melbourne, and I think it kind of makes sense. So let's work towards that.
I see.
But if it doesn't happen, but we're also very malleable and very flexible. If it doesn't happen, okay lah. If we can do it in 2019, okay, let's do it lah.
Right.
But if we cannot do it now, then there's no rush for him. Let's look at it in 2025. So I think we can go according to the flow.
And we've also never set it out to be, not that we want to run it forever, but we've never seen it as like, okay, let's plump it up and sell it off. Never seen it that way. So we'll call it this infinite game that we're playing.
So you are basically in until this thing dies.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully it doesn't die, but we want to create something, I mean, like Moose, a machine that runs on its own. And I would say he will give the pyramid analogy in a bit. Egyptian pyramids analogy in a bit. He does it better than me. Something we want to build that stands the test of time.
Right.
That stands the test of time, that it's running. I mean, that's why we're doing, getting the management involved, building the next generation to run. And hopefully...
Right. Succession plan already, almost.
Succession plan, generations running. I mean, then hopefully, we keep a business running that allow us to move to Melbourne and expand, move to UK and expand. I mean, intertwining our personal ambitions and the company's ambitions, but while keeping this machine locally running.
Okay, so what I'll usually do is I will plan on how the company should grow, and I'll share with him. I will share with him, like, okay, maybe in 2 years we should step out, appoint a CEO to run the company. We set up a board, for example. I chair the board and we can step out. But that is just the general plan if things remain status quo. But let's say things evolve and circumstances change, we will adapt to it. Let's say we don't need a board and we can hire a better CEO or CEO to do the job. We hire this person, run, and then we step out and then we just become shareholders.
Right.
Yeah. So I think or Kelvin wants to chill out and, you know what, I want to pursue a different career path. I want to be a CFO. So we can that can be part of the learning development program, send him for a CFO course, and then he works. He's a shareholder, he's a founder, owner, shareholder, but he also works in a black hole as a paid salary as a CFO. So I think what we have created is a very malleable, flexible machinery. Quite dynamic, where people can be, what company can grow as a certain direction, but within it the ecosystem also can evolve.
I see.
To cater to people's ambitions and personal drive.
So maybe as a parting note, I just ask each of you individually to answer this. Like, same question, right? Do you recommend I start a business with my best friend?
Yes. But it has to be on the basis of trust. Yeah. I think that's the most important thing that I think Moose joked once before to someone. I think I also joked about it that if he were to kill someone, I will help him hide the body and keep it a secret for life.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's the amount of trust that we
Let's hope this ages well.
That you will find a body somewhere there, but I think that's the amount of trust we had to begin with, to start the business. Because if not, you will, and I've seen it before, my personal friends as well, starting a business together, it always starts well. But then when it doesn't do well, or if it does well, then you start pinpointing, okay, is this guy causing the business to go bad, or what do you bring to, what does this guy bring to the table? Hey, I'm bringing in the sales. This guy is just creative. He can be easily replaced. Yeah, so you got to look at it like, hey, do you trust this guy that what he's doing is helping you grow the business?
I see.
Yeah, so I think that's, for me, the foundation of what we had. And if anyone wants to go in business with a friend, do you trust him enough?
Right.
Or rather than, we are friends, hunky-dory, let's just do this together.
Okay, same question, Moose.
Same question.
Yeah. Should I start a business with my best friend?
Starting a business with a best friend, like many things in life, is a double-edged sword. I think we talk about fire, you know, it can burn you or kill you, or you can use it to
keep warm,
to cook food, you can, you know.
Mm.
Last night I was discussing with a bunch of friends about globalization. You know, it sounds like a good thing, right? Globalization, right? But a lot, there are winners and losers in globalization, you know. But people still think globalization is good, but it needs to be done in a very careful, in a very careful, curated manner. And if you ask me, the simple answer is I think you should, because with a best friend or with a friend or a family, there's an underlying connection, which is trust. And that is something that is very difficult to quantify, to measure, you know, how much is trust worth. Because if you really think about it, everything else in life can be learned. How to make coffee, how to do accounting, how to run a business, like everything else can be learned. But trust is something that cannot be learned.
Mm. Can only be lived.
It needs to be harnessed. It needs to be experienced.
It needs time to.
Funnily enough, it needs tribulation for it to be tested. And if you can help it, I think you should. I think you should, because the foundation of your relationship is trust already. That's why you became friends, right?
Right.
Right. But also, you got to be very careful, because like fire, it can also burn you if you're not careful. So you need to take the necessary measures to make sure that this trust can be developed into a very healthy, working, professional relationship.
Right.
Yeah. And I know this for a fact, because I personally benefited from a lot of people working in a Black Hole group. Out of the 170 that we have, a lot of them are very close friends.
Mm.
And sometimes it's difficult in the beginning to like, hey, at work, you are outside, you're just joking and mucking about, but suddenly I kind of whack.
Yeah,
the next day, it's like, suddenly you become so serious and whack. And I say like, no, but I'm not whacking. Some people whack because it's malicious, but I'm whacking for different... You need to, if you understand me, you trust me, then my intention is different. My intention is to really, so that we can grow together.
Yeah.
I have nothing against you. It doesn't benefit me to see you die.
So but I think some people cannot hear that.
Okay, you cannot hear that. But I need to go ahead with it, because I need to explain that I have a responsibility for the company.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't want to see you die and crumble.
Mm.
So I think if you can manage it and you understand the dynamics of it, you know how to harness the best of it, there are more pros and cons.
Right.
In globalization, in fire, in nuclear energy, and in starting a business with your best friend.
Right.
But you need to be able to control.
Now, I love the analogy of fire, because it's like, I guess it's a bit like, I guess, systemizing it so that if you know the nature of the fire and how it burns, if you want to do stuff with it, like cook, you might want to put it in a stove setting where it wouldn't get out of control and start burning the grass and everything. So I guess in a way, like, it's hard to do that in friendship sometimes, you know, systemizing. I mean, we learn each other's working habits and stuff. Then we're like, okay, here are some things that we can work on, and then here are some landmines that maybe we try to avoid.
Yep.
We will disagree here usually, but maybe I just trust in the lame handle. So that's a bit like building a system so that the fire is controlled. And then you can harness it for all its positive properties.
And we also learned it the hard way, because over time, because as friends, right? You know, the way you speak as friends, like, hey, what the fuck? Why you do? Yeah. Why you like yeah. that? Yeah. No, but over time you realize that, hey, as a friend you can say like that, but in a professional setting, yes. you gotta like, hey, Kevin, yes. do you mind yeah. if I share with you? I think,
right.
You know? Mm. So then you learn to have a bit more finesse in the way that you correct.
Like tech, right? Yeah.
yeah. And not only between ourselves, like between him and the staff as well. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah. you know, because we are so laid back, right? Then like, hey, yeah. wait, no lah, you cannot like that. Yeah. But after a while, we realize that, hey, back then I was working with them, so it's okay yeah. that I speak like that. But now yeah. I'm a CCO of a company, and
yeah.
there's
yeah.
a certain weight to yes. this. So when I say, yeah. we always joke, right? Our your whisper is somebody's type, somebody's storm. Yeah. So yeah. now we got to be a bit more careful in the way that we say things. We got to be like, hey, that's really good. I really appreciate the effort, but how can we do better? So yeah, I think we've developed. Yeah. better finesse and
tact, right?
More tact. Yeah. A bit more tactful in the way that we approach things.
Yeah, it's not. Like, people think this is being political, but it's not. It's also being sensitive and
being sensitive. Yeah.
And being strategic about how you tell somebody something also, right?
So I think to be able to draw a line, friend is friend, whack is whack, joke is joke, put down is put down. But I think
professional.
But I think there's a certain time that you have to behave a certain way. And I think I've learned how to do it. I'm not a master of it, that's for sure. But I think we've learned to do it a lot better.
Oh, thank you for that.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. So I guess we end on that note.
Yeah.
Thanks to Moose and Calvin for your
time. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
So if Rimi and I, because of this, we start some conversation and then our friendship ends, and as a result, we close the Work Salary Man, this will be the last podcast we ever do. Thank you guys for being on.
It's been a good run.
Very happy.
It's been 5 years.
Really. Yeah. So thank you everybody for watching, and see you guys in the next one. Hopefully, if we don't break our friendship. Okay. Thank you.